From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Here we are on a Thursday evening with The Dice Men Cometh again, and this week, for episode 107, Garth...
Yes?
I want you to put the boombox up on the desk.
Uh-huh.
I want you to press record and play at the same time.
I'm holding down the fingers on the buttons.
Because, unfortunately, I hate to say this, episode 106 was eaten by the Edge Radio / Internet gremlins. I'm not impressed.
So I'll laugh. What else can you do?
It's disappeared forever, apart from our interview with... Mitch from Joe Dodgy Dice and Games, which we have posted. Anyway, we're here for episode 107 on the 25th of February. I'm Mark.
I'm Garth.
Hey, I'm Tanya.
And we've got Tanya back in the studio. So this week it's the Dice Persons Cometh.
Oh, that's very politically correct. Thank you.
And it's really good. Glad. It's good to have you back, Tanya.
It's good to be back.
I like to think of you now as an official Dice Person because really... You're here almost as often as we are now.
It's true. It's only a matter of time until I take over.
Hang on. Weren't we talking about the horrible history that Tanya has of breaking this show as well?
It's all part of my plan.
Yeah. So maybe we should just make sure again that we're recording. just to
Can anyone out there hear us? I don't know.
Anyway, we are going to talk about something... A bit of a special this week because we are going to talk non-stop about games we've been playing, but we're going to consolidate and make that all about one of our favourite Australian publishers, Rule and Make.
That's right. Because for those of you who didn't hear last week's episode, which is everyone, in case you happen to be listening live on the wireless, I think someone else uses that tag. Anyway, you wouldn't have heard... about our new competition. Now, you may have read about it on our Facebook page, but we have an amazing competition. We're going to tell you more about it later in the show. But suffice to say, it's from Rule and Make Games, a fabulous Australian company. And we're going to come back and talk about them and the games we played with them in a few moments. That was the Presidents of the United States of America with We're Not Gonna Make It. We are going to rule and make it.
Whoa.
Here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. It's Mark, Garth and Tanya. And as usual, we're going to talk about what we've been playing.
Yeah.
Garth, what have we been playing from Rule and Make?
Wow. Well, we will start with the smallest of the games that we are going to be talking about. And we're going to talk about... Ninja Dojo Fight!
Whoa!
Which started off as a bit of a Kickstarter exclusive for one of their games that came out. I think it was maybe Entropy or possibly even one of the other ones. It's been a little while. But it's a small card ninja deck game that is done in only a few minutes. When we played it, it probably went around, 15, 20 minutes, I'd reckon?
It was quite quick.
It was quite quick. Plays from 2 to 4 players, and it's pretty simple because all you're trying to do is to prove you're the best ninja. Now, Mark, this is something you've done most of your life anyway.
I am a ninja.
So it was finally very good for that to be condensed down into a nice card form.
Yes.
But, look, it's a small deck of cards where each player will take 4 cards. Each card is numbered 1 through to 4, and they're going to be your little hand. And on your turn, you're going to play one of those cards, which will give you some abilities. You also have a deck of weapons, and you might have katanas, or you might have spears, or you might have ninja stars, or you might have the Grandmaster.
Oh, yeah.
Or you might have a bowl of ramen.
What?
Which doesn't sound like it's very powerful. However, when it comes to fighting... It is not only delicious, it is the only thing that can take down the Grandmaster because his tummy is rumbling. Now, what you'll do is that secretly each player is going to choose one of their 4 action cards. Now, the 4 things that you'll be able to do will be, if you choose a number 1, you'll be able to split your body, which is swapping one of your weapons with another player's weapons, altering that a little bit. Or you'd be able to do your Typhoon, which is draw a weapon from the primer, from the weapons deck, then discard any weapon.
Sounds exciting.
That's why it's a Typhoon! Or you can reveal your third eye, Mark.
Yes, right. As I do.
Which is to reveal another player's weapon, which is quite important. Or the last thing is you can charge up, which is take the lightning card. Now, that lightning card is a very powerful little card.
It sure is, yes.
Because the way that this game becomes very technically a little bit more interesting is that if two players play the same numbered card, bearing in mind there's only four to choose from, then they don't get to do their action and they just have to sit on their hands and watch everyone else have the fun. Except if you have the lightning card.
Mm.
So the lightning card is essentially kind of like a tiebreaker when it comes to I've played a one, Tanya, you've played a one. Mm-hmm. I get to do the one thing, you get to sit and watch me do it. So that's how it's all going to happen. And then you're going to start fighting.
Wow!
Yeah, finally, it was going to happen. So once you've all done your actions, one, two, three, and four, everyone's going to then start resolving those actions, and then you're going to have the battle. Now, what you will have done, and I forgot to mention this at the start, is that you'll also get dealt out one face-up weapon card and one face-down weapon card. So around the table, you'll be able to see, oh, Mark, you've got one ninja star, and Tanya, you've got a katana. But I don't know what's underneath that other card you've got. And what you'll do then, you'll have the battle, and you'll be able to then secretly choose one of those two cards that you've got. And then simultaneously, everyone will reveal them. And whoever has the highest valued fighting weapon will win. If there's ties, it then goes to your second weapon. And that will be resolved. And essentially, it's the first player to then win out of, I think it's first to five battles.
Five rounds, yeah.
Out of five rounds. They're going to be the winner. Now, this game plays really quick. I probably made it sound more complicated than it is because it's very easy to explain when you're sitting around with the table.
I've got
the cards laid out in front of me right now.
I think it was almost as quick to play as it was to explain them.
Yeah.
I certainly found it a fun little filler. Nice art, easy to understand, very clear. Although I kept thinking, I've played a game like this before and I can't think what it is. And of course, we played a game later. And then I recognised, this is where it's from.
Yeah, it's got some very similar mechanics to a game that we might talk about later. But it's in a much more smaller, compact, 15, 20-minute kind of scenario. Look, it's very basic art style, but it's very easy to understand. Maybe minus some of the symbols on the four little action cards, because we did have to consult the rule book a couple of times just to figure out exactly what the actions were. But again, we are a bit thick. But Tanya, coming from a drawy, arty kind of person, you said you thought the art was, you know, nice and poppy and it looked good.
Yeah, I love the overall style of the art. I think it's really colourful. There's a lot of clarity. The only issue I had, aside from the fact that they've used symbols instead of just putting text on the bottom of each card to say what it does, which is pretty straightforward. A lot of games do that, and they should, I thought they cheaped out a little bit on the little characters on the cards. It's basically the same character on every card with just a slightly different bit of decoration, and I thought if they'd, you know, gone all out a little bit more on those poses, it might have helped set the cards apart a little bit more.
Sure. So there you go. There's professional talking. You're listening, Mark?
Complaining about the art on cards as well.
Yeah, and Mark, I don't know. This is your baby. You're the art man.
Is it a defence that I believe... This game was it a stretch goal or was it an extra?
No, it was one. It was basically an add-on because, again, the game was going so well, they were just able to throw this in as a little add-on, which I think is fantastic. You know, the fact that you can get another free game.
Two for the price of one.
I know. Who would have thunk? So, look, I think this is a great little filler of a game. It doesn't take up any space because it is the size of a deck of cards. It's easily explainable. I think Al and Alan have done a really good job from Rule and Make just to get this out there.
Yeah,
very, very happy. And I'm very happy to be saying that it's one of the games we're going to be giving away with our Rule and Make Maker Rule competition.
Now, Garth.
Yes.
What else are we going to give away that we've been playing?
Well, we are also going to be giving away another Rule and Make game.
Yes.
Now, this one is slightly different because it's not by Alan Chang and Alistair. It's by Scientist Robertson, although it is published by Rule and Make.
Mm.
So this one is Robots and Rockets. Now, have we got time to talk about this now?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Robots and Rockets is essentially two decks of cards, so the box is twice as big as Ninja Dojo Fight. But you are going to be a moon travel agent. Could you imagine being a moon space robot travel agent?
Sounds awesome to me.
Sounds better than being a real life travel agent, that's for sure. I'm a travel agent. However, this is a competitive card game of interplanetary tourism. Again, it plays for up to four players. And what you're going to be doing is you're going to be trying to get as many robots as you can to their chosen destination by using rockets. That's right, Mark.
Right, rockets.
Yeah.
So I had to think for a second there. What's
slingshots?
How do the robots get there?
So the way this game's going to be set up is that you're going to have a deck of robot cards. You're going to have a deck of rocket cards. You're going to start with a face-up couple of rocket cards so you can see what the destinations are going to be. And some will be Mars, and some will be Saturn, and some will be Jupiter.
No.
I'm not going to say it, and you're not going
to
say it
no
either.
No rockets to Uranus?
Exactly right. But those rockets will all fit a certain number of robots. So everyone's going to be able to have their own deck of cards that they've got in their hand. And on your turn, you're going to be able to basically play robots going to the destination that the robots say they want to go to. And as soon as one of the rockets is filled up, away it goes to its chosen destination, which is ultimately to you, because it's into your own little private rocket mm-hmm. tableau
yeah,
in front of you.
Until somebody steals it.
Exactly right. Yeah. Until I generally steal it.
Yeah.
Because there are also special ability cards that will allow you to tractor beam cards towards you or to be able to stop other players from being able to place their robots in this rocket that you really want to get taken off and make sure that it goes to your Mars, because that's the one that it's going to get you maximum points.
How many Marses are there?
Well, I don't care as long as the robots all come to my Mars.
And then, of course, you've got a some sort of a shield
yep.
that can block a tractor beam.
Exactly right. So there's quite a bit of interplay between players.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's very, very similar to the Mission Red Planet
yeah, that's
rocket
the,
system
that's
where
right.
they're only going to take off as soon as it's full. So if there's eight robots sitting in a rocket and it fits nine, you can't place something that's going to put two more robots in there. You have to place a one. So it's still a little bit of sort of hand management to make sure that you've got your cards ready to go. You probably want to try and think a turn or two ahead, but it is hard because obviously you don't know what the other players have got. You don't know what secret stuff you cards they've got.
Well, you can't split up a robot family. Like, you can't send little Johnny robot off to Mars and mum and dad off to Jupiter. I mean, no. It's just not going to happen.
Exactly right. And then the way it works is once the cards and the decks are depleted, that's the end of the game. And then it goes through what I find to be quite an interesting scoring mechanic.
Interesting is a word, Gar.
Yeah, because the way it works is that everyone then tallies up the number of robots based on the destination. So you count up your Mars robots and your Saturn robots and your Jupiter robots. And then starting with the player, let me get this right, who has the fewest robots, full stop, you get to choose one of the four scoring cards. And the four scoring cards are most robots to each of the four destinations. Hmm. So essentially the player who has done the worst gets first dibs in, oh, well, I've got five robots that go to Mars. I better take the Mars one. Then it goes round and round the table until it gets to the player who was ostensibly winning. They had the most robots there. And that's how the final scoring is determined. And it just seems pretty counterintuitive to me.
It was the one glitch I had where it was like, oh, this game's like Mission Red Planet.
Yeah.
It has that fun loading up rockets part, people stealing rockets. Mm. And then the scoring almost was, okay, forget what just mm-hmm. happened. And that's where I had this sort of feeling about, oh, it's like Killer Bunnies where you play mm-hmm. a game for an hour and then you roll the die and the winner of the die roll is the winner. Now, it wasn't quite like that, I must admit, because clearly we didn't have a very good understanding of how the scoring worked.
Well, your teacher, he's good looking, but I don't know.
So, you know, maybe if we had been aware of that's how the scoring worked, we might have played it differently. Look, again, it was fun. It only took us, what, 20 minutes,
yeah,
half an hour?
Yeah. Because you, when you see the size of the decks of the cards, you think this is going to go on for quite a while. But you actually cycle through the deck of robots, particularly, really quite quickly. So that's great that it looks good on the table, and I'm not denying that at all. I just think, for us, we probably should have played it a couple more times, having played that, understanding how the final scoring system works, because it almost felt like the Reiner mechanic where you're going for the lowest.
Yeah, you get
score
the most of the
type,
least, or the least of the most.
Yeah,
that sort of thing.
Exactly right. So again, nice little game. Certainly fill up that space for 15 to 20 minutes. Looks good on the table. Plays four really quite comfortably, and again, relatively easy to teach.
So these rockets, they're going between planets?
No, they're going from the Earth to planets via My Moon Travel Agency.
Is the Earth not a planet, Garth? So they're going between planets in the galaxy. Could you say that these rockets are intergalactic and planetary?
Ah, the Beastie Boys with Intergalactic Planetary. You are with the Dice People, Cometh, on Edge Radio 99.3. We are going to continue our Rule and Make-a-thon.
It's epic.
With Mark. Tell us about a game.
So I played another Rule and Make game that you, Garth, and you, Tanya, haven't played.
Is this a no-no-ny-no-no?
No, it's just a shut up and listen to me for a change, okay?
Because he actually gets to win for once.
So, exactly right. I hear he didn't.
Yeah, well, let's not go there. Let's not go there. So this game, this was the game that started it all for Rule and Make.
Yep.
It's called Rise to Power. It was their very first Kickstarter. Really successful. Again, designed by the 2 Owls, Alan Chang and Alistair Kearney. The amazing thing about this one was it did so well for them. It's been picked up by Ape Games, as in, and it's now distributed in America particularly. It is 2 to 6 players, 30 to 45 minutes. It actually was nominated for one of the Best Australian Game Awards as one of the Best Australian Games.
Really?
And it's a game of cards where you are building a... Don't know if you want to call it a city, but you're building a tableau in front of you where your central card is a power station. And what you're doing is you're powering contracts. So you have other cards that go around the power station that are contracts, and you power them with a thing called Prism. It's a mysterious power of the future. Ooh. And it's the if you like, the currency in this game. So you're collecting Prism cards of different numbers, and there's 3 different types of Prism, which are 3 different colours. And each contract requires a certain number and a certain colour of prism. So you basically collect these contracts, and then you pay the prism to power them. When you power them, they flip over and they become a district. And you have districts on Earth. You also have districts up in space, like a spaceport and an island and a villa. And again, the districts are 3 different colours. So you are building up districts around the power station. There's a rule where your district has to touch either another powered district or the power station to be played. So you can't go crazy and you can't go too big. Now, the way a turn works is at the start of each turn, you take 2 contracts from a central row of 4 and you put them in your tableau. Then you can take actions, and actions can be taking prism cards. They can be paying for a contract. They can be using a special exchange ability. Each card has a unique ability that you can basically choose to throw that card away and use this really, really powerful ability. But what happens, and this is one of the really interesting decision points in this game, is when you throw away that card and it goes out into the exchange, it immediately flips over and is a paid contract that any other player on their turns can take.
Ooh.
So it's like a free district.
Ooh.
But the abilities that you get from these are really, really powerful. Like, it might be to draw a whole extra bunch of prism cards or do a couple of free upgrades. Now, what upgrades are is some of your... you have various different victory point levels of the same district, and you can upgrade from a higher victory point to a lower. Now, this may seem, you sort of might wonder why, but when you remember, you can only have 8 districts before the end of the game. So you can quickly rush to 8 different things, or you can upgrade, and those upgrades don't take up extra space in your tableau, but you count all the victory points of the cards in that stack. So you can upgrade 3, maybe even 4 times. So it lets you build up a lot of extra victory points. So it's relatively simple. Oh, the one action I forgot about, which is one of the really interesting ones, is you can steal a contract from another player. So if you can power that contract, you challenge them for that contract on your turn. If they've got enough prism in their hand, they can say, no, you can't take it. I'm going to power it. And they immediately power it. But if they can't, you steal it from them, you pay the prism and you put it into your city and you power it straight away. So there's a lot of back and forth. And I really liked that level of interactivity, which you don't often get in these smaller games. It has those careful decisions, like I said, with the fact that you've only got the display of eight. So you have to decide, do I want to put this down? Am I going to upgrade? Am I going to make it bigger? Am I going to get the points? Am I going to let someone steal it? Will I steal another one? There's careful and interesting decisions all through the game. And the one other thing is you have a little player mat with little counters on it, and you have three statistics, if you like, that you keep a track of. One is how many prism cards you draw when you take a draw prism action. One is what's my hand limit. And one is how many districts can I have out on the board? Because although I told you the first person to eight basically ends the game and then everyone else gets one turn, at the start of the game, you have a limit of, so either four or five, I can't quite remember, districts that you're allowed to have. So you've got to, as you build the districts, they give you various amounts, some of them none, some of them one or two of these attributes that they let you increase. So basically, at the start of the game, you don't have enough to be able to win the game. So you've got to play districts that let you build up these attributes to then be able to win the game. And that, again, was an interesting decision point, because one of our players, Josh, what he did is he put out all his, had his districts out, and then he realized he had no districts that gave him more districts, and he filled all the spots. So he couldn't play any more cards.
So his tableau only allowed him to build four or five or whatever.
In this case,
he'd done that, and then was he not able to upgrade them or do anything at all?
So he could still upgrade,
yeah, okay.
But he couldn't play any new contracts. So he sort of basically screwed himself. And, you know, so that's something you've got to be really careful about in this game. You've got to look at what you're building, not just based on the most victory points. The other thing is you've got some agenda cards, because let's face it, everyone's got their own agenda. And the agenda cards are like the first person to get the set of three green cards. Or one of them was, so there were the three different colours, and there was another one, the first person to get three upgrades. And the first person who sort of achieves that gets to claim that agenda card and gets bonus points. And there's a deck of those where there's a few extras, so you only have three come out. So, as I said, like, it's relatively quick. It played in less than an hour, and that was including a learning game.
That's great.
But there are these interesting decision points through the game, and the level of interactivity where, you know, oh, I get this contract because that's the upgrade I want. Oh, no. Now Sarah, because she's got a handful of prism, she steals it and she builds it and I can't get it back. Totally blown my plans out of the water and I sort of got to go and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
I read a couple of reviews about this on Board Game Geek. One person said they hated it. Why would you even bother? And the other person said they totally loved it and it was amazing. Like, it's really quite unique in that it sort of had that effect. For me, I really enjoyed it. I can't wait for you guys to play it. We might even get it to the table at the pub later if we can. Because it is quite thinky.
Yep.
But plays in a short amount of time. The art is great.
Finally, the art.
He's been
talking for 5 minutes and hasn't mentioned
the
it.
The art is really great. I like that sort of modern sci-fi styling. I don't know. Look, I mean, obviously I'm the only one of the three that's played it. I really enjoyed this, and I was surprised because it comes in a small box, looks fairly nondescript, even though it is very nice to look at. Had a lot more game packed into it than I thought it would have.
Yeah, well, look, I watched a Tom Vassell Dice Tower review of this because I haven't had the chance to play with it yet. And yeah, he said basically the same thing. He was really impressed with the look of the game, the way that it played, you know, in a relatively short amount of time. You know, I think he said something to the effect of it packed a lot of punch for a small box. And I think that's great because there are lots of games out there that you can do a mammoth city building effort in 2, 3, 4 hours or what have you. But we don't all have that time. So I think to be able to condense that down into 45 minutes or an hour is a great benefit to a game and something that should be shouted from the rooftops. So I'm really happy that this game is damn hard to come by at the moment.
Exactly.
So this game only came out in 2014. You would be hard-pressed to find a copy of this in Australia, I'm sure. If Ape Games have got games copies of it over in the US, they certainly aren't in Australia, that's
for
sure. No, they've
completely... The first print run in Australia is completely sold out.
Mm.
And in fact, we were very lucky. We almost had to give away my personal copy of Rise to Power to make a complete set of Rule and Make games. However, the good team at Rule and Make Games have promised us... They've got one copy up their sleeve that we will be providing to the winner of one of these games because we've got a copy of that as well to give away.
Exactly right. I don't think we mentioned that we are giving away one of every game that Rule and Make have designed, with the exception of Burger Up, which I don't think's been released
yet. No, the Kickstarter's finished and it's coming out soon. So, but all the other four, we've got a copy of each and we're giving those away. Garth, what's the fourth one?
Well, the fourth one is a copy of a game that I personally kickstarted.
Ooh.
We were also lucky enough to have a bit of a print-and-play experience of this before we ever had my physical, hard, paid-for copy. But this is Entropy.
Yes.
Now, Entropy is another small box game because this is something that Rule and Maker certainly... becoming well known for. The largest of the games, I reckon, would be Rise to Power.
It is, yeah.
Entropy would be second. It played with the four of us last week in the New Sydney. It took about, what, an hour or so, do you reckon, Tanya?
About 45
to an hour. Again, this was a learning game for at least half the people sitting around the table. Tanya and Leon certainly had it played it before.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a very successful Kickstarter again. When you and I and Trent were able to play a little print-and-play version of this however long ago, it was about two-thirds of what the game has ultimately become.
Yeah, that's right.
And the game is a hell of a lot better for it. So what you are doing is each player is playing, I guess, someone whose reality has fractured, and you're trying to get back your own reality, which sounds really complicated, but essentially what you're going to be trying to do is form this really... beautiful panorama of four cards that are unique to your character.
Did I mention the art is amazing in
Not
this?
Not yet. And again, Tanya, we'll get your personal expert opinion on this because we had to listen to some conflicting arguments last week.
Mm.
But it's a really simple game. Now, part of the reason we talked about Ninja Dojo Fight at the start is because Entropy uses very, very similar mechanics in that every player is going to have a deck of six cards. Six cards equals six actions. They're numbered 1 through 6. Numbers 2 through 6 are all the same actions for every player. Number 1 is going to be unique to the character that you're particularly playing.
Mm.
But you're going to be doing a turn in the same way, which is that everyone is going to secretly choose one of the six actions. Now, each round is 4 actions each. So everyone's going to secretly choose their action. You're going to simultaneously reveal it, and then starting with the smallest number to the largest number, the actions are going to be resolved. However, if two or more players have played the same number, a temporal clash occurs, which means you don't get to do your action, unless you're holding the anchor, which is very similar to the lightning card that is in Ninja Dojo Fight! But it has a whole bunch of really interesting options that you can do for your six actions. So you've got the ability to take the anchor. You've got the ability to take some cards from the discard pile or from the nexus, which is your pile of cards. You're able to collect cards and put them to the left of your character, which is your elements are then going to be shrouded. No one can see what they are. So, Mark, I could be holding a bit of your little paralleled universe here, your own reality, and you don't know that.
You often are holding a bit of me that I don't know about, Garth.
You could be able to turn your realities from being shrouded, which shrouded means they can be nicked, to locked in, and they can be turned over, face up, and they're your reality. No one can touch those. Mm. There is also the option to take some wild fragments, which are ones that will fill in any blanks for any player, but they're never going to be locked in. So they can be taken. You can be about to make that one move that's going to get your fourth reality, and boom, Tanya goes in there like she did and took my fracture, Well, at least my wild reality that prevented me from doing it again and again and again.
Also, I got vindictive when I realised I was losing and I was hiding bits of all your realities in my shroud section.
There we go.
But it's like, well, if I can't win, nobody can.
Exactly. But look, the fact that it does offer really different strategy options is really interesting, because part of the other ability that you can do is there are only four turns in a round. If you have at least three temporal clashes, you're going to have a little bit of an end of round bonus, because you'll get to reveal the top three cards of the deck, and if one of those is your reality, of which there's a pretty fair chance there will be, you just get to take it and put it into your own individual tableau for free, which is incredibly powerful. So I've played this probably three or four times now, and it is a very powerful and a very legitimate strategy to really just try and stuff up other people's actions by doing what you think they're going to do to get a temporal clash, so that at the end of every round, there's a fair chance you're going to get a piece of your own reality.
I sort of wish it wasn't as powerful a move, because I feel like on repeated playings, people are always going to opt for that as their strategy, which is a real shame, because there are so many different strategies you could take with this.
Yeah, I think that's something that would certainly happen a lot more at the higher player counts, because it does go up to six players. Ooh. There's only six actions, so there's a fair chance that that kind of thing is going to be happening pretty commonly, I think.
Mm. And I have found, I've played it twice now. The first time, the player who won had a temporal clash almost every action of almost every round and basically drew his cards out of the middle. But then in the game we played, the person who won wasn't quite able to do that. So there is that sort of a balance. And what I find, you know, and I hate to use the I word again, but what I find really interesting is, you know, they talk about this being a short filler, and people, I did actually read a review on Board Game Geek that said it was the best filler they've ever played. But to me, there's a level of depth, strategic depth in this game that makes it more than a filler. And I think when you start to get people who dare I say, know games and who play very strategically, I guess there's a bit more, I don't know if it's analysis paralysis, but there's a bit more decisions, the longer decisions. And the game tends to take a little bit longer, but it feels really intense.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a bit of that is to do with the fact that you're constantly looking at everyone else's little cards and say, oh, you've played the number one and you've played number three and, oh, you've got this and that. So it's not a solo experience at all, which is great. To have a relatively small box game that, yeah, it says it plays in 15 minutes. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It plays 30 to 45 at least.
Yeah.
But it's an exciting, enjoyable, tense half an hour, and it's packed in again into a really compact box. Now, the Kickstarter exclusive copy that I've got, the anchor is this beautiful chunky metal coin, which just sounds really cool when it hits the table, and it looks great. It also comes with some shiny foil cards, which look spectacular. It comes with the Ronin expansion, which adds a new dimension, because the Ronin expansion, he doesn't have any of his own realities, but he can sort of operate off the wild fragments. So he can try and collect those wild fragments and turn them into his own reality, which is incredibly powerful. But the risk is he can't ever lock anything in. So he's got a whole other strategy as well to try and do. So look, I really recommend this game. You can find this game on the Rule and Make website and order it, which is fantastic. It packs a hell of a punch. I would certainly recommend this for your half an hour, 45 minutes. Very easy to teach. Quickly, I think the art is fantastic. The panoramas, they look awesome. When you've got all four of them out there, it looks really, really good. Tanya?
Well, I'm not saying the art isn't beautiful. It's absolutely stunning. It's really skilled. It's sort of digital painterly science fiction style. The problem is, I think some of the different characters and different environments just look a teensy bit too similar, especially if you're just starting playing. You know, you sort of have to double check, is that my card? Is that, you know, my bit of environment?
Yep.
I found a similar thing with Coup, where a lot of my fellow co-players were sort of going, what does this guy do again?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they'd just been that tiny bit more caricature, a little bit more difference in the colours, people might have, you know, grokked onto it a bit quicker.
Sure. Yeah, that's completely
that's
fair enough.
That's my only issue. Oh, that and one other thing, the horizontal layout of the action cards. I have tiny baby hands, and it's really hard to hold six cards horizontally in my hand the whole time.
Yeah, and read what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, that's completely fair enough. I thought it funny that Leon mentioned that as well as a bit of a criticism, even though his favourite two-player game is Summoner Wars, where all the cards are the same landscape format. It's like, Come on, Leon, figure it out. But look, I would strongly recommend that. I'm very happy that one of our listeners is going to get a copy of it because I think they'll have a lot of fun with this game.
Hmm.
Mark, should we go and play some music?
We will.
Appropriately, that was Entropy by Grimes and Bleacher. Welcome back to The Dice Woman and Sidekicks.
Oh, mixed up the world.
On Edge Radio 99.3, we have a really awesome competition for you.
Yes, we do. But
I'm just taken aback. She stole our show, Garth.
Yep, I warned you it was coming.
That's all right. Normally the show breaks when she's here, so that's fair enough.
Look, part of the plan.
Exactly. Before we get to that, though, the only thing I didn't mention about Entropy is that our dice man in absentia, Leon, was kind enough? Is that
crazy
what we should say?
Enough.
Crazy enough, foolhardy enough.
Devoted enough.
Exactly right. To actually do a 1-minute-ish video review of Entropy, which is now up on our website. Is it, Mark?
No, it's
but on, it is up on the Board Game Geek Entropy page.
So it's on YouTube. So it's on the Dice Man Cometh page on YouTube.
Yep.
And also on Board Game Geek on the Entropy page.
Fantastic.
Is it on our Facebook page?
I can't even remember.
And I think it's later going to be up, or at least linked to, from the Rule and Make page.
Ooh, that's pretty exciting. So if you want to get Leon's opinion of it, which needless to say is pretty glowing, please check out the Entropy page on Board Game Geek.
And the other thing that I forgot to mention, because, hey, that's how I roll, is in Rise to Power, there's actually, I can't even remember, 3 or 4 sort of mini expansions that you can add as components, either one or more or all of them. One of them, which is I think is CEOs that gives like individual player powers. There's a new type of government district that's a different color. There's more agendas. There's some other thing. There's 4 like mini expansions that come in the actual base game.
That's
so
great.
Heaps of replayability.
Wonderful. Now, let's talk to Tanya because we did bring her in on a Thursday night. She's probably normally asleep by now.
It's true, with my teddy bear.
Now, Tanya, part of the reason we wanted to get you in was because you've been on the show before as our resident RPG expert. But as we were sitting around the table last week, you mentioned that you'd been playing a lot more board games and RPGs of lately, and I just want to ask why.
Well, I mean, obviously RPGs are the superior form, sort of guys, but they take a hell of a lot of processing power, so,
yep.
You know, each week, and I was doing it weekly, as the game master, I've got to plan my games, and then for, you know, 2, 3, 4, even 5 hours, I'm running the show, which, as you can imagine, is just a little bit draining sometimes. So it's a lot easier on me to reduce the amount of RPGs I'm doing and have a group of friends over and play board games where essentially the game is the GM and I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
You can just have some fun.
Yeah, yeah. Toss back a few glasses of wine and, you know, instead of then slaughtering my players, I'm just slaughtering my own chances at winning.
And so is there like a regular stable of games that you're going to, or you're pulling in lots of new games?
My own collection's sort of gradually growing. We're always trying new things. We've been playing a lot of Betrayal at House on the Hill because that's a little bit different every time, which is fun. We just got Coup, lots of fun.
Yeah.
Just bought Twilight Struggle just for me and the hubby.
Wow, that's a bit of a difference from Coup.
Yeah, it's
Coup
a bit of a
and then Twilight Struggle.
Yes. Yeah, we need to set aside a day for that one, I think.
It is awesome. And is there the people you're playing with, are they generally, they've played a lot of games and so they're easy to introduce? Or is it like your role-playing? I know one of the things you do is you get new people that have never played maybe your system or maybe even never played role-playing games before and you introduce them. So are there games that you use to introduce the new players, or are these the sort of old hands?
I really have a mixture. So I have a couple of people who go to other games nights, but I also have people who, I like to think of them as hipster gamers, where they haven't really gamed before, but gaming, you know, board gaming is breaking out now from being sort of a geek hobby into being a general, you know, everyone's got a few games in their house thing. So, yeah, and we're sort of just all learning together. I mean, we really, I hate to admit it, but a lot of us started out on Cards Against Humanity, just getting drunk, having a laugh, you know. And now we're onto the hard stuff. It's a slippery slope.
It is, and it's very, very easy to go down that slope because once you find a mechanic that you like, you then go on and find, well, I can go down and now I can try Codenames, or I can go and try Mysterium or something like that, and just go for all these games that, again, they're accessible, Mm-hmm. They're relatively easy to teach. They look amazing. Something like Mysterium on the table just looks fantastic with that second edition. And usually they work with 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8 players. Mm-hmm. So which means they can be a very much central part of your social evening, which is awesome. Yep. So it's good to see that you're taking that step from the very basic entry-level RPG stuff into, you know, the board game master race.
Yeah, that's right.
Now,
got me.
Now, speaking of board game masters, we've heard enough from you, Tanya. Okay, back in your box. We're going to play a quick bit of music and come back. We'll tell you exactly how to enter our Rule and Make Maker Rule competition. A couple of other bits of info and we'll get on with it.
Ah, isn't that sweet? That was Eddie Vedder with Rise. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Competition, I hear you say, Tanya. Yes, we do have a competition. Thank you for asking. We have the Rule and Make a Rule competition.
Yeah.
I'm very happy that I haven't stuffed that up yet. I'm going to get it right every single time for the next 4 or so weeks while we run this competition. But how do you enter? That's a good question as well, Tanya.
See, I don't want them to know because I want these games myself.
That's completely understandable. So, look, basically all we need you guys to do is to jump on our Facebook page. We have a pinned post of this competition where all we're doing is asking you for a zany, crazy, hopefully a little bit funny house rule that you do on games at your place. Now, we have excluded Monopoly. No one ever plays Monopoly right. And the best thing about Monopoly is flipping the table and walking out of there.
That's right.
But we have been getting quite a few entries already from people who are house ruling things like Bling Bling, the Tok Tok Woodsman style game where you're chopping down. It's not a tree this time. You're going mining.
Mining for jewels, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. We've got, trying to think of a few other ones that we've got, but we've got quite a few house rules that are going on here, I think, which are very, very clever. One of the most recent ones I saw was Survive, where they just say we're house ruling, all the meeples are the same value.
Ah.
And that is an official variant that's on there. So I don't know whether or not we have to allow that one, because it is in the Survive rule book.
Now, the other way, of course, to get a bonus entry is an iTunes 5-star review.
It's compulsory 5 stars. I love it, Mark. That's awesome.
Oh, well, I mean, of course you could put whatever you want on there, but hopefully it would be 5 stars. If you do that, of course, obviously let us know, because often the iTunes username is not the same as the username on Facebook. So, So let us know about that and we'll give you a bonus entry. Now, Garth, did we make it clear, if you jump on and post like 50 house rules...
Yep.
We're not going to give you 50 entries, are we? We're just going to give you one, I think.
Yeah, we will. But we'll obviously have a look. And I think we're allowed to be a little bit creative and that's an amazing house rule. That certainly deserves a vote. So, look, the more the merrier. Please share the post with all your family and friends. Although Mark Zuckerberg doesn't let us say that. But please share it and share it away, because sharing it will get you some entries, which is lovely. So, look, we're giving away 4 games. 4 games that are all of the games that Rule and Make have ever released,
yes,
with the exception of Burger Up, that's coming up later on this year. So, look, if you want some more free games, you've got to be in it to win it.
Now, we did also have last week in the Mystery Disappearing episode 106, we did have our interview with Mitch Dovey from Joe Dodgy Dice and Games, where he talked to us in particular about the his buying the... I don't know if you call it the intellectual property, but the name, the stock...
The assets.
Yeah, of Mill Sims. Now, we have posted that interview because, of course, it's disappeared in the episode. We've posted the actual interview on the Facebook page. But one very important thing is Mitch was so kind to give us an exclusive promo discount code of our own for listeners of this show. If you go and listen to that interview, you will find there is... that promo code, which is, I'm going to give it away just because I love yous all so much. It's Dodgy Dice Men, DodgyDiceMen, Dodgy Dice Men, and you'll get 5% off from what is almost already the cheapest online board game store in Australia.
5% off the cheapest is really good.
It's the cheapest.
Especially because I'm a tight ass.
We've only got a few more seconds, but Leon has made some other videos apart from the entry video. You can check those out on Facebook or on our YouTube page.
Yeah, it's amazing what happens when he learns how to put himself in front of a camera, isn't it? Surprised it hasn't broken yet. So, yeah, he did Summoner Wars. He's done Deception in Hong Kong. He's just recently done Entropy. No doubt there are more of those.
Oh, there are more in the pipeline, that's for sure. Tanya, it's been so nice to have you again.
Pleasure as always.
Even though you did try to take over, I'm sure we're going to have you back sometime.
Succeeded.
Oh! But look, that's all the time we've got for... all the time we've got time for. Ooh, my reality is fractured.
I think it is.
Just like Entropy. Enter the competitions, win more games, buy stuff with the promo code, listen to the episode, which hopefully will come out this week. And thanks so much for being part of the Dice Men and Women Cometh world. We'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.